Hello.
Hello, Gary.
Hey, Marcus, how are you?
Not bad. How you doing?
I'm doing better than not bad, so it's okay.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Everything good with you? Everything good in your world?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I just sold a book on Sonny Rollins, and I've actually gotten to interview him. I was speaking with him on the phone yesterday, so, you know, it's kind of cool, right? Yeah.
I would have to say that's very cool.
The guy is 88 years old, and he is so sharp and so witted, and he's just got a huge heart, and he's an amazing, of course, you know, he's an amazing artist, but as a human being, he's really quite a guy, and it's been a real pleasure just kind of, you know, having some time to talk with him and getting to know him. It's been a real treat.
I bet. Wow, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And it looks like you have some other stuff coming up as well. I guess you have the Dark Was the Night, the Blind Willie Johnson Journey to the Stars, as well as the How Young Charlie Chaplin Taught the World to Laugh and Cry coming out as well.
That's right. Yeah, the Chaplin book is coming out next year with a really superb illustrator, a guy who was actually my Tai Chi teacher many years ago. And, you know, it's funny about Willie Johnson, because if you ask, like, Jimmy Page or Jack White, you know, like, who is their favorite slide guitarist? And you think they'd say something like Duane Allman, you know, even Clapton, you know, does beautiful stuff. And they both say Willie Johnson. And it's an amazing story. The guy died in 1948. He was completely off the radar. He died in poverty, and nobody paid any attention to him until, like, the folk blues revival in the 60s. And then his music, this beautiful song called Dark Was the Night, ended up on the Voyager spacecraft that was sent into space with that golden record, you know, for aliens to listen to when they came upon the satellite.
Yeah.
I think it's just an amazing story about, you know, somebody whose life just kind of faded out, and yet there they are, man, up in the heavens, you know. And their music is still playing out there, right? Yeah.
Exciting. Yeah, these stories are thrilling. And you keep finding all these cool stories.
You know, I just root around in the stuff, man, in the stuff that's out there, just looking for things. And, you know, years ago there was a race of aliens on Star Trek, and when they encountered them, they asked them what they were doing, and they say, "We look for stuff." And that's kind of what I do. I look for stuff, you know?
That's outstanding. No, we need a lot more people to look for stuff. We do. We need people who look for stuff. It's fascinating. It is.
Thank you.
And you currently have a book out. It's Carlos Santana, Sound of the Heart, Song of the World, which I loved reading. My son is 2.5 years old, so he's not quite ready to sit through all of this yet.
Right.
But
right.
Let me tell you, the colors and the artwork wowed him. He loves visual. He loves colors. He loves sound. He actually loves the music of Santana. And it's funny that you reached out to me when you did, because I had just watched the Apple, the Apple concert, 3 days of Apple shows. I can't remember the name of that big concert in 82 in California, where they did the alternative, the hard rock, and then the rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
And they showed the entire Santana performance. And then I watched another special on Santana on Access TV. And then, like, seriously, a week later, you reached out to me with this book.
That's synchronicity, man. That's
seriously is.
Yeah, that's the patterns of the universe coming together there, right?
It is, and it's amazing, because I just started playing Oye Como Va and Black Magic Woman for my son on my Luca playlist, which I keep adding these songs that he gets interested in, and the sounds and the groove of those songs really hit him. And that's one of the many things that are special about Carlos Santana, which you touch on in your book. It's called Carlos Santana, Sound of the Heart, Song of the World. Is it available for people to buy now?
Yes. In answer to your earlier question there, it debuted, it came out on September 6th, and it's gotten some great reviews and doing a lot of promotion right now. And it's available on Amazon. It's available on, you know, Barnes & Noble, any of those places. In fact, it's even at Walmart and Target. So it's out there. And about the visuals, Rudy Gutierrez is an amazing artist. I mean, he's a great teacher. He teaches at Pratt in the City here, the big big art school and in New York City. And the amazing thing about him is that he knows Carlos. He's a friend of Carlos. Carlos buys original artwork from Rudy directly. And Rudy did the cover of the Shaman album, Carlos's Shaman album. I think it was 2002. And if you look at that album, you see Rudy's style. He did the artwork for my John Coltrane book that came out in 2012. And he's an amazing artist. He's an amazing guy. We both have the same birthday, so we became friends. And after the Coltrane book, he said, you know, you should really check out Carlos Santana's life, because it was the cover of the Abraxas album that inspired me as a boy to be an artist. And so I looked into Carlos's early life, and I found this wonderful story about him and his father.
Yeah, the mariachi.
The mariachi father. In fact, his father was a mariachi violinist, too. So they were kind of hoping that Carlos would follow in the tradition. And Carlos, he adored his father, who was a really popular mariachi musician locally in this very rural, poor part of Mexico, Jalisco. And, you know, he wanted to be like his father, like, you know, many boys do. I certainly did. You know, but you get to be a certain age and you have your own ideas. And after they moved to Tijuana, Carlos starts to hear American blues on the radio from across the border. And he hears people like B.B. King and Chuck Berry. And he, this stuff just like immediately like digs into his soul. And Dad was not too crazy about that. He looked at that, and there's a Spanish word, and he kind of, you know, he told Carlos that that was gang music. That, you know, right? I mean,
how typical of parents to say that about rock and roll.
You know, and he was a very traditional guy, Dad, you know, Jose Santana, and he looked at this as kind of like, really, you know, he looked at it with a shady eye. It was kind of street music. It was, and of course, I think we can say probably that it had something to do with the fact that, you know, many of these great musicians were black men. That was probably part of it. And, you know, so he discouraged Carlos, and the more Carlos tried to play that violin, the more it just didn't feel right. So eventually, you know, they started butting heads, and Carlos stopped playing the violin, and they weren't really talking. And, well, you know what happens at the climax of the book. I don't want to give it. You know, eventually there's a reconciliation, and Dad comes to understand that his son loves music because of him and everything he taught him. And it may not be the same kind of music, you know, but music is music, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know that. We both know that, and we both love that music.
Well, absolutely. I mean, music, you know, good music is good music, whether it's rap, jazz, blues, folk, rock and roll, or classical. It makes no difference.
And it depends on what music touches your individual heart and moves your soul. That's what it comes down to. And there's music you like and you enjoy, but then there's music that hits you to the core. That takes the music and everything to a whole new level.
You know, I've got a broad love of all different kinds of music, and things that you probably would, you know, kind of laugh at, you know, from like the 50s and 60s, some real crazy pop stuff, and yet it goes inside and it really touches you. And it, like you said, it may not be the stuff you buy or listen to every day, but there's a little place in your heart for all those kind of songs that really they resonate with you. You know what I mean?
Yep. Buddy Holly's one of the big people from that era that you just mentioned that resonates deeply with me. I'm lucky my father played a lot of Buddy Holly, and I love Buddy Holly. Sister Rosetta Tharpe's another influence for me. And yeah, music, it's amazing what music can do when it touches your heart and reaches your soul. Now, did you have to do a lot of research to put this together? Because I'm sure with Carlos Santana, you had a lot of stories and a lot of angles to choose from as far as direction goes. Was it easy also to just tell this part of the story in the book? Or was it a lot longer and did you have to cut it?
Well, if they always start out long, and either you do it or your editor, when you finally get to that place, she, you know, usually all my editors have been ladies, and, you know, then they suggest certain things. And it's always better when you get to the essence and you trim out the fat, which, you know, you love all that stuff, but you got to let it go because you got to focus on the story. And I read tons of interviews, you know, from 1969 after Woodstock on, when Carlos made his real national debut. I mean, tons of interviews. Of course, now we can go to YouTube and you can watch and listen to tons of interviews, you know, as recently as like a month ago. And there's so much to comb through. Unlike my earlier books, you know, that came out in the early 2000s, I'm not really interested in the main story being like a life, you know, a birth to death thing. I want to take one story which really tells kids, that says it all about who this person is, whether it's Jimi Hendrix, like my first book, when Jimmy got his first guitar, something that it's a story that kids can understand, but it kind of says everything about this person and their roots. And yeah, there was a lot to look through for Carlos. And then his own book came out, you know, his autobiography, which he wrote a few years ago, and in which he corrected some of the things that he had said before. He kind of shifted around, so I had to change my text and accommodate that, too, because you have to kind of assume that, you know, the truth comes from the horse's mouth itself, right?
True. True. And did you end up having to read the book, Bringing My Story to Light, Carlos' biography, The Universal Tone, to fill in the details that maybe... Did it change your story at all when you read the book and when he clarified things that you said he had corrected from the past?
Yeah, it did, because, I mean, and, you know, certainly things for adults, but as way, you know, as far as kids go... there were things about his early years that he did talk about. And what they did was they gave me kind of a deeper feeling for the feeling that he must have had growing up with his mother, whom he adored, and like stepping outside his little house, no electricity, no running water in that tiny town where he grew up, and he was born in 1947. And you know, he'd step out and he'd listen to the songs of birds and the smell of the flowers and the fruit that was just growing on the trees. And so, you know, I tried to get some of that in there, too, because that's kind of like the feeling, mood, the vibe that kind of, you know, is around the story that has to do with Mexico and has to do with being a poor kid. And yet there are these beauties in nature, not, you know, there's music in nature. He's listening to the birds, he's listening to his father, and all of that kind of feeds into who you are as a kid and who you become as an adult.
You made a couple of huge points there talking, like one of them, the music in nature, not many people can hear it, but Carlos is obviously one of those people who gets that.
Yes.
And it impacted his sound. It's fascinating because throughout Santana's career, the fact that he's mixed the Latin, the salsa, the jazz with the blues, the funk, and the rock and roll and done it so smoothly and so successfully says a lot about his abilities as a musician and his intelligence as a human being. But he really gets it. And he's one of those special people, and one of the things that I've noticed, and you even touched on it a little bit in your book, which I don't want to go into too much detail as far as the book goes, but the shaman aspect of his life is very important to him, and it's something that maybe we don't talk about as much, but it's been such a huge influence in his sound and his style and who he is.
Well, you know, he's a very spiritual guy, and his spirituality is like John Coltrane's. I think that's why he adores, if there are two people he really adores, it's Coltrane and Miles Davis, and Jimmy, as a matter of fact. But I think that one of the reasons he likes people like Coltrane and Jimmy is because the three of them are all very open to all kinds of influences, you know, whether it's Indian raga music, you know, from Ravi Shankar, or it's jazz. I mean, look at the stuff he did with McLaughlin, right? I mean, that guy was all over the place doing amazing stuff. And Carlos has done many different types of things that most people don't know about. And how many musical artists, are that willing to to go in different areas and pull it together and make it their own. You know, that's a bold thing, rather than saying, you know, I'm a rock and roll, I'm a metal guy, I play like John Mayer, you know, I play folky rock, or everybody's got their niche. But Carlos, he's not afraid to span the spectrum. You know, I think that's what you were saying, right?
Yes, exactly. And he does. He touches the spectrum everywhere, and he fuses it all together. I mean, you hear the Latin sound, and you hear the Latin mixed with the funk, especially, and it was the Live Us Festival performance that I saw on Access TV, which is magnificent. I mean, you want to see Santana just wrecking it on stage, and just how talented that entire band is. I highly recommend you watch the Us Festival performance from 1982. They just were phenomenal. And his guitar work is magic. Seriously, I feel like I'm floating sometimes when I listen to him, because he takes you to those places. And that is one of the many, that's the shaman power of Santana and his music.
Well, and also getting back to something you said about him listening to nature and stuff. You know, Carlos has always talked about how, you know, he's not there playing jazz chords and complex chords and stuff. What he's doing is always playing melody. I mean, that's kind of like listening to the bird song, you know. I mean, he's kind of like a bird, you know.
Yes.
He's always playing a beautiful melody. And what makes it different than just anybody on a guitar or any instrument just playing that series of notes is, like, if you listen to, you know, certainly anything from Abraxas, you know, Oye Como Va, Samba Pati, but even the opening, that amazing opening to Smooth, you know, with Rob Thomas there, it comes out in the fingers. Of course, the fingers are doing it on the fretboard of the electric guitar, but it's the intonation, the way he takes those individual notes, not even chords, and he shapes them to create feeling. And if that's not magic and shamanism, I don't know what is, right?
That's true. That's truly taking music to the magic or the shaman level. He definitely shapes individual notes to make feeling.
Right. That's right.
Perfect example of what he does. And it's brilliant. Now, for somebody who may be not familiar with your books, why should somebody read Carlos Santana's Sound of the Heart, Song of the World to their children?
Well, you know, I don't want to get political because there's too much of a mess about all that stuff right now. But, you know, first of all, there's the fact that Carlos is an exemplary person from this maligned country, you know, of Mexico. And, you know, he represents the truth of the Mexican people. They're a beautiful people. And the other thing is that the book is about this guy, this boy growing up, and, wanting to be a musician like his father and finding his own path. But it's really about a boy. It's about a boy who becomes an immigrant. But even before that, it's about a boy who wants to be loved, who wants his father to love him, who wants his mother to be proud of him. And, you know, I think that's kind of a universal story that all kids can relate to and understand. The things that we do, like he agreed to study this violin when he really did not want to be a violin player, you know, but he did that because he loved his father. And then, you know, when we become teenagers, because the book goes up to him as a very young teen at like 13, mm-hmm. when he gets that first guitar, you know, sometimes we butt heads with our parents, and yet there's always that love underneath, you know, that yearning to get the love, to give the love. And so, yeah, it is a story about a guy who happens to be, an acclaimed musician, but it's also a story about a boy and his father.
Excellent. And I loved it. I can't wait till my son's older and he can sit down and actually enjoy a little bit longer book right now than he can right now. He's 2.5. He doesn't have the attention span to be able to sit through it yet, but he loves the designs. He loves the artwork. So please pass on to Rudy that he did a beautiful job with the artwork. And the fact that you've got somebody doing your artwork that did an album cover is so awesome. That just adds an extra coolness to the book that's already got a lot of coolness to it. So, and the album art, and for the younger kids, the album art is such an important aspect of music. And I don't know if people realize how important the album art was to the albums and the music when we were growing up, but it was a huge part of it and a huge part of the decisions and decision process when buying albums.
You know, back then, and I, you know, vinyl has kind of come back into vogue, you know. It's, you know, it seems like a retro thing, but I'm so happy because there's nothing. I mean, you know, you get a CD and it's great, and what is it? But it's maybe like 6x6, that square, and mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, you can see Rudy's thing on there. It was never a big album on vinyl, which is like 12x12, like a foot square. But mm-hmm. You're so right. I mean, back in the day, we used to wait for those albums to come out, whether it was The Who or The Doors or Jimi Hendrix or Joni Mitchell. It didn't matter who it was, because the album art was so much a part of the art of the whole album, and it was so beautiful, that stuff, whether it was a painting or a photograph, and so much thought went into how that art represented, that cover represented what was inside, with the amazing liner notes, like on Dylan albums and stuff like that, you know, and I really miss that, so... You know, doing picture books, you know, when I was a kid, I loved, just absolutely loved comic books, whether they were DC or Marvel. And there was great art there from people like Kirby and all the, you know, Steve Ditko, who did all the Spider-Man stuff. And so I kind of see, like, sometimes people say, like, why do you do picture books? Why don't you just write books? And because to me, like, it's very ancient. It's like going back into cave paintings, you know. The connection, the marriage of art, visual art with words, is such a beautiful and powerful thing. And you're right. It's exactly like what we used to have with these foot square album covers and the music inside, you know. It's a beautiful pairing.
It is. It is. And, let's see, with this, do you want to mention some of your other books so that people can maybe take a look at some of your other books as well, especially if they like this Carlos Santana book or want to check out some of the other works of you? I know, just, you want to list what you have so far and what you've got coming up?
Yeah, excuse me. Sure. If people want to see my website, they can go to GaryGolio.com, GolIO.com, and you'll see all the books listed there. If you click on the books, you'll see all the covers. You click on the cover, you go to the page, it tells you all about it. And the first book was about Jimi Hendrix as a boy growing up in Seattle. You know, a lot of people think he grew up here in the Northeast, maybe in Harlem, but in fact, he grew up in what was called the Rainbow City then, because it had so many different kinds of people in it. And that had such a huge influence on Jimmy and his music, you know, all the colors in his music, all the different sounds. And the next book was about when Bob Dylan came from When Bob came from Minnesota as a boy, well, a boy of 19, to New York City to meet his hero and mentor, Woody Guthrie, in 1961. I'm so sorry. I've got something stuck in my throat.
No worries. Take care of that. Get it out.
So there's Hendrix, there's Dylan. The third book was about... Oh, man, this is terrible. It's about John Coltrane and him growing up as a boy. Oh, gosh.
Don't worry, I can edit all that stuff out.
Give me one second, man.
All righty, go ahead.
just looking for some kind of a lozenge or something I can put into my throat here, but I don't have anything. anyway, if they go to the website, they can see. Oh, man.
You all right?
I'm really sorry, man.
No worries, you're good. You okay?
I'm having some sort of a crazy thing going on with my throat here, but not the thing you want to have happen when you're having an interview.
We have editing. You're fine.
But that's all I can say right now.
No worries. But I definitely want to say thank you very much for your time. I will shoot you an email with the link as soon as I get the interview up. Give me a couple of days to get it up, but I will get it up. And it's always great talking to you. It's so fun to talk to people about music who love music and who do great things with music, and you're doing all of that. And we need more authors like you sharing the world of music with people. And the way you find individual stories that are different than what everybody knows and you're able to turn them into a full-blown story is fantastic. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for sharing these great stories that people need to hear.
Well, thank you, Marcus. I mean, you know, I've had interviews with some wonderful people, but and I'm not trying to shine your shoes, but the kind of questions you ask and the intelligence, not just the musical savvy, but the intelligence behind your questions is such a treat for somebody, you know, for an author to answer questions like that when somebody really gets the subtleties and stuff. So I appreciate everything you said.
You bet. Well, thank you very much as well. And I will talk to you in the very near future, and we'll keep talking when you've got these great books coming out. So keep it up, keep writing, and we'll talk soon.
Fantastic. And keep introducing your son to all that crazy stuff.
You know I will. He's going to get all that music for as long as he's around me, that's for sure.
Fantastic, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gary. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.